Chapter 6, Ibiza. After my final examinations, the prospect of 3 months writing a film on a Mediterranean island appealed to me more than 6 months of looking into ears, noses and throats. The new, long fuselage, Boeing Ford Anglia, log 7 to the power of the cube root of 987 GTQ, stopped. Its engines didn't choke, splutter or cough. The wheels did not screech on the tarmac. And the nearest aeroplane that actually shuddered to a halt was a Douglas Dakota prototype at Reykjavik on January the 8th, 1937. Neither did the grim-faced pilot throw off his goggles, sigh with relief, turn to his co-pilot and say, "We made it, Ginger." I'd never been to Spain before and was about to start now. Even the foreignness of the place seemed alien, except for my pipe, several packets of Three Nuns and St. Bruno mixed, and the odd gin and slimline tonic with ice but no lemon in it. We arrived at the villa, which was the upper apartment of a two-floor building, very spacious, with two balconies and absolutely covered in fucking bougainvillea, so picturesque it made you want to excrete. The next day, I hired a bicycle, and so did John Cleese. He couldn't ride his, but then he was only 25 years old. As John pointed out, transport in Ibiza at that time was rather primitive, and we needed individual conveyances so that we could examine the beaches in the shortest possible time to find out which would be the best one for writing a film set in London. This would take, say, 2 weeks of the working period, which was 3 months anyway. And there's plenty of time yet, said John. I think we should have bikes, because we're bound to want to go off and buy pens and pieces of paper and pens and things and scotch tape and a pair of scissors and typewriter ribbon. And well, look, it's taken me 2 weeks to get acclimatized, and I still haven't thrown off this throat. John Cleese, whom I'd always known as an over-industrious, painstakingly meticulous worker, appeared to be hinting at something. It is rather hot, isn't it? I'm feeling a bit groggy myself, I said. Perhaps a couple of weeks' rest might be a good idea. Do you think that we should? I mean, David and all that, said John. I mean, he has paid us, Graham. Yes, I suppose you're right. Yes, yes, I'll probably be all right tomorrow. Right, yes, 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 fine then. Fine, great. Oh, shit. Do you mind if we don't start work until tomorrow evening? Only I promised I'd take Connie to Calabasas tomorrow, and she's only got a few more days here, and it'd be a bit awkward to get out of it now. Damn. Oh, that's fine by me. I've only just finished taking those bloody exams. We have done the synopsis for the film. I mean, I wouldn't mind taking a bit of time off. So we'll start on Friday. Yes, right. It'll be a bit noisy, but we can shut ourselves away. Noisy? Yes, there's a fiesta, lots of dancing, fireworks and wine and things. Oh, I've never been to Spain before. Haven't you? Oh, well, you must go to the fiesta. Well, let's have a look at the diary. That brings us to Monday, so we'll start on Monday. Ah, no, but Monday and Tuesday are Connie's last 2 days, so I'd like to see her off at the airport on Wednesday. That will give us 2 days. Look, why don't we make it 2 weeks? Done. So we closed up our notebook, marked film, and went to the beach. I spent the next 2 weeks searching for something that I knew was probably very sexy. I hadn't telephoned my girlfriend, and she very likely wasn't going to come out, which was a bit of a relief in that I'd rather half-heartedly decided to marry her. A telegram arrived at the villa for Dr. G. Chapman. I realized that I'd passed the examinations. Click! Went a tape recorder playback button, and David said, "It was the 14th of July, and the campsite was full of French drunks going out as I returned. I was walking along the road back to the campsite, lined with poplars. I was saying good night to everyone in any language that seemed to suit their appearance. When I came to saying it in England, I think I was answered with good evening in English from Graham. And I first thought he was coming towards me from the campsite, but it turned out he'd been following me for some distance. He asked me what I was doing and would I like to have a drink at the bar. He told me a strange concocted story about staying one night in the campsite before his room in a villa was ready. He said he'd seen me in town and trailed me a bit. We went to a bar by the swimming pool. He introduced himself, his work, and ordered two enormous double Bacardis and Cokes. We were very amused, making for instant rapport, by the antics of French people dressed in banana leaves, pushing each other into the pool, pouring wine over each other's heads, and bellowing every national anthem they knew. After quite a few drinks, click! Well, we had quite a polite conversation about the other occupants of the villa, who included, intriguingly, Marty Feldman of Round the Horn, and his wife, more interesting to me than Cleese or Chapman. Then, suddenly, Graham asked if he could come and see my tent, which seemed eccentric from such a straight and ordinary-looking man. I genuinely had no idea until we got there, and he was supposedly surveying it, that he was actually going to grab me and give me a passionate kiss. That led to seeing the inside of the tent. I was totally amazed at the novelty of it to him. We didn't do anything devastating, but spent the time exploring each other. Great fun, not heavy and have your rocks off immediately. It was romantic. Still, it was a year before I could believe I wasn't being taken for a ride.